Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. The $40 million North America Trek Project has opened at the Columbus Zoo, with new habitats for the Mexican wolves, bald eagles, black bears, and more. Visitors will be able to experience North America's diverse landscapes. In a social media post announcing the project's completion, the zoo wrote, "Every trail, every turn, every animal in this new region was designed to bring you closer to the wonder of this continent and to each other." Joining us to talk about the zoo today is Tom Schmid, the president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. Welcome to All Sides, Tom.
Good morning. How you doing?
Now let's start with the North America Trek. It opened for the first time very recently. Is it in the same spot of the zoo as people would be used to where North America was?
It is. It's kind of a reimagining of that region. So that was one of the first areas that that actually Jack Hand and the team had renovated or built back in the early 80s. So almost 40 years old, so it was time for
parts of it
a rethinking.
Looked like, yeah, yeah, parts yeah. of it looked like it was from the 80s.
So we really wanted to put a lot of thought into three things. First of all, the habitats for the animals. What are the animals going to experience year-round? Mm-hmm. The space that the staff work in, and then obviously what our guests experience. And so those were the three driving factors behind just a complete reimagining of that area, and it really, really turned out well.
Now, it did get delayed a little bit. Your goal, you wanted it open around Memorial Day-ish, and that didn't exactly happen. What happened? Why did it get delayed?
Yeah, so it primarily weather-related. We just had a lot of rainy days this spring, and it's just difficult. It's difficult to pour concrete. It's difficult to seal up buildings. It's difficult to grade pathways when you've got wet soil. And so and then the sort of the final piece was we had an accident on the construction site where one of the big glass panels was shattered. And so we thought, well, this is a good time just to take a step back. We were pushing hard. Our teams mm-hmm. were, all of our staff were, and we thought, let's just take a pause. Let's see what we need to do. We want to make sure the animals have plenty of time to acclimate. And so it was a tough decision, but it was the right one for the animals and ultimately for our guests, because they have a better experience now walking through the exhibit.
Now, my understanding is that the design of the North American Trek was inspired by landscapes of the national parks. Tell me about that design. That must have been so fun to design.
Yeah, so as we started this process, we know we obviously wanted to focus on these North America, these iconic species. But, what are some of the memories that all of us had growing up? And it was visiting national parks. And mm-hmm. so that overall ethos of bringing people close to nature and learning about habitat protection, wildlife conservation, in many ways our mission aligns very well with the national park system, as well as our partners here in Ohio, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, that manages beautiful parks throughout the state of Ohio. So that was really the inspiration behind some of the thematic elements, a lot of the interpretation, really taking folks on a journey around North America.
For the animals that are in the North America Trek area, which ones are seeing the most, the newest habitats, the most improvements to their area? Which animals are smiling the most?
Well, honestly, they all are. Each habitat has been completely transformed. So I think about our Mexican wolf. Now, in the past, when you first walked into North America Trek, you sort of looked through a chain link fence down on these animals. Now you're looking up through almost an invisible mesh material with a waterfall in the background and just lots of spaces for those animals to roam. Our black bear, Stevie, has a wonderful new habitat, a lot of climbing structures, a wonderful pool to swim in, but probably the one that changed the most was river otters. So before we had, it was a really good habitat. It was just difficult to see the animals once they got in the water. Now we've got these huge acrylic windows, and to be able to watch a group of river otters swim through the water, it's a pretty magical experience. You realize how strong and fast these animals are, how adept at swimming they are. And just to see the kids with their faces up against that glass, I mean, they're literally inches away from the river otters. It's pretty spectacular.
Do you have a favorite part of the North America area?
Boy, that's a good question. And actually, it's as much as I love all the habitats that I just described, really one of the parts that intrigued me the most is our Ohio Center for Wildlife Conservation. So okay. we repurposed an existing building and turned it into a lab and an interpretive space for all of the conservation work we do here in Ohio. So, we do work all over the world, Asia, Africa, India. But this was a chance to really remind all of our visitors that we do a lot of work right here in Ohio. And so we have our hellbender rearing facility, so the mm-hmm. largest amphibian in North America. We've released over 2,000 hellbenders into rivers all over Ohio, burying beetles, critically important species that don't always get a lot of attention, but for soil health and other things, plains garter snakes, our freshwater mussel facility. We have a state-of-the-art freshwater mussel research facility partnering with OSU right across the river, and most folks have no idea what goes on in that facility. So we wanted to bring all these projects to life so you can walk in this center, learn about this conservation work, and hopefully be inspired in knowing that just by buying a ticket to the zoo, you're helping save animals from extinction.
Yeah, I did a segment with one of your guys who is in charge of the hellbenders, and it was just absolutely fascinating because I had honestly not known anything at all. So is this a place where I can learn more about the importance of saving the hellbender?
Absolutely. In fact, you can see them too, because
yeah.
they are difficult to see
yeah.
in rivers, as you can imagine, very well camouflaged. But we've got several beautiful aquariums in there where we've got some hellbenders that you could take a look at. So absolutely.
The rarest species of gray wolf in North America is the Mexican wolf, which visitors can now see. You mentioned that there's a better area for the Mexican wolf. How many Mexican wolves do you have?
So we have five, right? Okay. Actually, we have seven right now.
Mm.
Yep.
And but those aren't the only wolves at the zoo. You also have Winter and Storm. They're a wolf pair, but they live in a separate habitat, right?
Yep.
Do they have to be kept separate? Why is that?
They are. I think we're just they're older animals. The five that we just brought in are younger. They've sort of bonded as a troop, and so it's good to have them in their own spaces where they're comfortable.
And you, in the description of the trek on the zoo's website, it says visitors can stand face to face with animals, Which animals are we getting closer to now than we could before?
Well, certainly, as I mentioned, the river otters.
Yeah.
They, again, because you have that beautiful acrylic underwater viewing, you can literally be inches away from those animals. So that's pretty amazing. The bald eagle habitat is really well done also. So you're essentially walking through the iconic covered bridge that you see in some different areas around Ohio. And on either side and above you, the bald eagles maybe stationed. So that's one that you can get really up close. Those are amazing animals, and really to be able to appreciate them, you appreciate how large they are, how big their talons are. That's a pretty amazing experience.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about what's new at the Columbus Zoo with Tom Schmid, president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. So some news that has happened recently, just in the past few days, Liberty Township trustees voted to add a dollar fee to the price of a zoo ticket to help pay for fire and EMS services that the township provides for the zoo. They say it's because the zoo is tax exempt from paying property taxes and the sales taxes go to Franklin County. So Liberty Township is trying to recoup some of the money they spend providing emergency services to the zoo. What are your thoughts on this extra dollar on the ticket?
Yeah, so first off, we're a not-for-profit organization for a reason. We're deemed a public benefit organization, and so just like many other cultural attractions and different organizations around the country, if you have a public benefit, you become a tax-exempt organization. Mm-hmm. And so we've been a tax-exempt organization since we really split off from the Rec and Park Department in Columbus probably 40 or 50 years ago. And
okay.
so that's a fundamental tenet with not-for-profit organizations all over the country. So that's sort of one piece of it. But if you think about the legislation, so we've looked into it, and evidently this was developed in specific, very narrow language for Anderson Township, just outside of Cincinnati. There's a large music festival, the Riverbend Music Festival, that a lot of things happen in a big concert venue. So a lot of EMS. Service calls there, and so the legislatures wanted to develop a method that they could tax this music venue to basically handle that particular situation. So I think we're clearly not a music venue, we're not a concert hall, we're a wildlife conservation institution. The legislation clearly was not designed for zoos in mind, or museums, or churches, or schools, and so that's sort of where we have a bit of a misunderstanding, I think, with Liberty Township. We'll continue to have conversations about it, but at the end of the day, our view is that the legislation really wasn't really designed for zoos or aquariums or museums.
So are you saying that you're going to talk to the legislature about redefining the legislation, or are you going to talk to Liberty Township about this dollar?
So the first thing we want to do is make sure that there's clear intent from the legislature. So we are having discussions with the legislature about the intent. What was the spirit of the bill? What was the intent of the bill? Let's clarify that so that this doesn't happen to other organizations around the state. And then once we get through that, yeah, we'll continue to have discussions with the township.
So the township says that they provided $300,000 of services to the zoo last year, and they say for free. So they say they're willing to negotiate with the zoo. Are you willing to negotiate with them to either give Liberty Township some money or maybe negotiate this dollar down to be less or something like that?
Yeah, and again, my preference at this point would really be to wait to hear back from the legislature and understand the intent of the bill, and then we can see what happens after that.
Okay. Are you, what do you say when Liberty Township says to you that they are giving you all these services, they're running all of these different, you know, ambulance and fire and police runs to the zoo whenever someone at the zoo needs emergency services, and they're doing it for free? Should the zoo be paying Liberty Township some money for this?
And again, what I would remind the Liberty Township trustees is that we are a tax exempt institution for a reason. I mean, I live in Liberty Township. I pay property tax in Liberty Township. I'm happy to do that. I've never called EMS, but I'm happy to support that. It's part of living in the community. But we are a not-for-profit institution for a reason.
Now, the zoo does cause a lot of traffic during wildlife specifically, and the police resources have not always been there to help with some of this, to deal with some of the wildlife's traffic. Do you think more money would help for wildlife to have less traffic?
Oh, and we've put a significant amount of money to that. So we actually pay for special duty officers to be out there to help direct traffic.
Liberty Township?
We pay Delaware County Sheriff's Department and I don't specifically know which law enforcement jurisdiction. But yeah, we support those officers just like a church would on a busy afternoon or a shopping center. So that's certainly something that we continue to do. We've also invested in more focus on our parking operation. So these are, I mean, they're in a way, they're good problems to have. Part of the challenge is with wildlights, it's essentially there's no fee for that event. So members can come in for free. If folks buy a ticket during the day, they can come in for free. And so it's really difficult for us to predict attendance level since essentially it's a free event. So we're looking at all options in the future, but we realize that that does cause some stress in the community, and we're working hard to try to mitigate that.
Have you crunched the numbers, though? If Liberty Township voted, because they voted to enact this dollar within 60 days, I do believe. So if it's a $1 fee on every ticket starting 60 days from now, how many tickets do you sell per day versus people who have memberships? Have you crunched the numbers on how much money Liberty Township would be getting?
Yeah, no, I haven't. We typically probably between 60 and 70% of the visitors that walk through the zoo every day are members. And we get a lot of folks from Franklin County that come in. Probably half our visitors come from Franklin County. Half our members come from Franklin County. So those folks help support the zoo through their levy. But no, we haven't specifically crunched any numbers.
You said you want to go through the legislature to get the intent of the law clarified. Liberty Township's dollar per ticket fee goes into effect in 60 days from when they voted. Will the legislature answer you quickly enough, or do you think that this will go into effect?
Yeah, that's a good question. And again, if we fundamentally don't feel that it applies to us, I think it's going to be important to at least get some direction from the legislature in what their intent was. And so once we have that, I think that'll give us a little bit better information in terms of what our next steps are.
Okay, so right now you have a phone call into the lawmaker who had the bill, or like what is your next step right now?
Oh, we've got multiple different pathways. We actually have an advocacy firm that we work with that's helping us with this, and so just a lot of outreach to try to understand exactly what the intent of the bill was, and really to determine whether or not was it designed for a zoo, and therefore is this a legitimate tax on a zoo, or is it not? That's mm-hmm. the key question.
Last question: Were you surprised by this dollar, or at Liberty Township, did you see this coming?
I was somewhat surprised by it. They had reached out to us a number of weeks before all this came about, asking just to meet with some of our senior staff, and our senior staff went and visited with them. But yeah, we were a little surprised. And again, it's when we dug into the legislation and really understood at least our interpretation of the intent behind it, then that was even more surprising that they would then levy this on the zoo. It just didn't make sense to us.
Well, we are talking with Tom Schmid, CEO of the Columbus Zoo, and he is staying with us for the hour. We are going to be talking about conservation efforts at the zoo and some babies that are on the way. So stay with us when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Conservation has been one of the driving factors for the mission of the Columbus Zoo. They're actively working to protect animal species and habitats in the zoo and in the wild. This includes breeding programs, research, and education. And the zoo is getting ready to welcome two new babies to its grounds and is celebrating an unprecedented milestone that has never been done in a public zoo and aquarium before. Still with us is Tom Schmid, the president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and the Wilds. Thanks again for being here, Tom.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's start with this recent milestone that the male weedy sea dragons achieved. So what milestone has the zoo reached with these sea dragons?
Yeah, so these are notoriously challenging animals to breed. And I think the sheer number of animals that we have now, I think it set a precedent. So we work with our other aquarium colleagues around the country to really fine-tune our husbandry techniques, make sure the water clarity and quality is just right, making sure the conditions, the aquarium that they're in is particularly large. It was specifically designed so that we could have breeding in that habitat. So we're just really excited about this. They are magical creatures. If you've ever seen them, it's like something out of a Dr. Seuss book and just amazing fish. And the fact that we've had this breeding success is really just, I think it's a reflection of the care and attention to detail that our aquarists and curators have focused on these species.
Why is it so difficult for these sea dragons to carry eggs? Why is it so hard to...
Well, it's not terribly difficult. I think it's just trying to develop just the right conditions for them to be able to breed. The males, like all seahorse species, the males actually carry the young in a pouch on their abdomen. And so it's all sort of things have to be just perfect in their environment for this to happen, and so we're pretty excited.
Have they hatched yet, or is there?
We've had a number of mats. In fact, we've got some now that are probably 2 to 3 inches long. Mm-hmm. Just beautiful, beautiful fish, amazing animals.
Do you have to keep the babies behind the scenes, or can people see them?
We initially keep them behind the scenes because, as you can imagine, the different diets that we need for these animals are pretty specific. They have different stages that they go through in terms of the food that they eat. And so once they get to be a certain size, then we can introduce them back in the habitat with the adults. But when they're young, it's good to keep them sort of separate. It's just easier from a husbandry and feeding perspective.
Now, do you keep them all, or are there other zoos around?
No,
that
we're working with other zoos now or in other aquariums to find homes for a lot of these young.
Okay. And explain, is this species endangered? How is this a step in your conservation efforts?
Yeah, so these are protected species, both the weedy and leafy sea dragons. And so it's really an opportunity for us to share how sustainable collections can happen with these animals, because they occur naturally in the waters of Australia and the Indo-Pacific region. And there's very specific parameters in terms of collecting these animals in the wild. So there's collectors that have permits, they can actually collect a pregnant animal, bring it into an aquarium, allow the animal to give birth, and then they return that animal back in the wild. So it's a very sustainable way to be able to manage that fishery, and that's part of the story that we want to tell.
And the sea dragons are not the only babies at the zoo. Two elephants are currently pregnant. So tell me about who's pregnant. It's Phoebe and
Phoebe and Sunny.
Sunny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, the other end of the spectrum from small to large,
yeah.
Right? So Sunny is, they're both pregnant, very pregnant. Sunny is probably weeks away now. Mm-hmm. And so if you see her at the zoo, she's pretty unmistakable. She's a wide elephant typically, but even with that calf in there, it's a little bit exaggerated. You can actually see the movement of the calf even mm-hmm. under her thick skin, so it's pretty remarkable. You can tell a little bit by her behavior. I think she's ready to have this baby, and mm-hmm. and again, hopefully that'll happen the next couple of weeks. And then Phoebe, we're thinking sometime in the fall. Mm-hmm. So to have two pregnant females, two calves on the ground at the same time later this fall and into the winter, it's going to be pretty remarkable.
Has this ever happened before for the zoo? Have you had two pregnant elephants at the same time?
No, we've never had two. Frankie was the last pregnancy, and that was about 4 or 5 years ago. So staff is really working overtime to make sure we're ready. We actually redeveloped one of our yards that used to have a rhino that, mm-hmm. that now is an additional elephant yard, so that gives us more habitat, more flexibility when the young are born. So a lot of preparation getting ready for the next several months.
And does care for a pregnant elephant look different than care for whenever you're taking care of a non-pregnant elephant? I mean, are you able to do ultrasounds? Can you like set a due date and stuff like that?
We are, and we do we continue to do blood sampling on the moms, the females, right now to determine where their hormone levels are, and if we see changes in that, that usually indicates that the pregnancy is imminent. So, and a lot of it depends on how the birth goes too. If the mothers the nice thing is that Sunny will have a lot of help. She's got great mentors with some of the other moms that we have at the zoo. And so they will collectively sort of help raise these calves. And so we are hands off when we need to be, but we're also hands on when we need to be. So we'll just monitor the birth, monitor how well the calf and the mom get along. And if we need to intervene, we will, but we'll pretty much let nature take its course.
Do you plan to keep both calves at the zoo, or can you?
Yeah, so certainly for the first several years. We belong to part of our Conservation Trade Association, the AZA and ZAA. We have breeding programs where we work together with other zoos. So if you think about Asian elephants in North American zoos, particularly in the U.S., they're largely managed as one herd that happen mm-hmm. to be located in 20 different zoos. And so we know the genetics, we know the lineages of all these different animals, and so in order to maintain genetic diversity, we'll move animals and develop mm-hmm. breeding recommendations. So at some point, these young might go to another zoo, but probably not until they're juveniles or sub-adults. So we'll have plenty of time with them here, but our long-term goal is to not only support our breeding herd, but also support the other zoos around the country that have similar elephant programs and that are supporting research and conservation work for Asian elephants in the wild.
And I'm guessing where they end up years from now depends on the gender too. Do you know the gender
yep.
of them?
We don't, not yep. yet. Yeah.
Okay. So. And if I remember correctly, the last time there was a baby, you had a naming contest. Are you going to do that again?
Oh, I suspect we will. Yeah, that'll be a real interesting one. Yeah. Yeah, it's just love. We always like to get the public input in that, and then, but also we have supporters that have been very generous to the zoo, and sometimes they want to weigh in as well. So we've got great opportunities to come up with a really meaningful name for both these animals.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about what's new at the Columbus Zoo with Tom Schmid, the president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and the Wilds. And we can discuss baby animals a little bit more later, but I wanted to turn back to money again because, everything costs money, even a zoo. And the zoo's current 10-year levy expires at the end of this year. So recently it was decided that you will seek to renew the current levy, not add to it, but renew the existing levy. Was there talk of an increase, or was renewal always the plan?
So when we first started thinking about this, you're right. I mean, you mentioned, you know, that everything costs more. Food costs have gone up significantly. And I think even about just inflation that's happened since 2020. And then other things that we're doing. For example, we now have an evolved threat detection system at the entrance of the zoo. So all our guests walk through that. And it was an expensive program. We actually got some support from the state to help build the infrastructure, but that requires us to have 4 to 5 security officers, rangers out there working that system, getting our guests through it, managing that system. That's a significant added cost. It's not a new exhibit at the zoo. It's not really enhancing education, but it's one we think is really important. I mean, we see nearly 2 million people a year at the zoo. We want to make sure to keep them safe. So there's operating costs like that that have gone up dramatically. And so how do we pay for those? We try to keep our ticket pricing as low as we can, our membership pricing as low as we can. The levy is a huge part of that. So the levy from Franklin County residents and homeowners and businesses help pay for animal care, for our veterinary care program, for a lot of our facility maintenance, our trade team, and certainly our security and safety program. So we talked about an increase, but at the end of the day, we thought it would be just best just to have a straight renewal. We understand that there are lots of agencies out there that are requiring more support probably than they've gotten in the past. And I think that's been exacerbated over the last 6 months with changes happening in Washington. So we're fortunate that we have the ability to generate a lot of earned income through our mission program and membership and food and beverage and retail. And so we always want to make sure there's a good balance. And so that was really the driving factor to just stick with a straight renewal. So no tax increase.
Do you plan on increasing ticket prices or membership? If you do this renewal and don't get more money, if you need more money, are there any plans in the future for increased ticket prices?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we pretty much always have to do at least a inflationary increase every year. Otherwise, we just start falling backwards. And so what we're really doing now is looking specifically at some of our membership pricing. As I mentioned, 60 to 70% of the folks that walk through the door are members. That's a little bit higher than most other zoos. And I think traditionally that was because the membership was such a great value. You know, typically in a cultural or an organization or attraction, museum, aquarium, zoo, science center, membership will typically pay for itself in 2 to 3 visits. In many cases, a Columbus Zoo membership would pay for itself in a visit and a half. And so we've been doing some adjustments to pricing to try to get to that 2 to 3x time, 2 to 3 payback, which I think is still a great value. I mean, a lot of folks we know come to the zoo 5, 10, 20 times a year. Some folks come every week, and so it's certainly a great value. But yeah, we always have to be mindful of inflationary costs and trying to balance that pricing adjustment while still maintaining public access. And that's the other good thing about what we're able to do is we have so many different ways that folks can get in, either through a complimentary ticket, through our community access programs, working with some of the settlement houses and different organizations around the city where we distribute complimentary tickets to the library program with Columbus Metropolitan Library. Lots of different ways for folks to be able to access a zoo if they can't afford to buy a ticket or a membership.
Now, as far as numbers goes, this renewal levy, it's about, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's $11.20 per $100,000 of a home's value.
That's right.
Okay. And do you know how much the zoo gets on average from this levy? What part of your budget is it?
Yeah, it's about 20% of our budget. So it's about $20 million a year.
$20 million? Okay. And if you have... are you going to do a 10-year renewal again?
So yeah, that's the goal.
Okay. So are there any plans specifically for what that money will go to? Because I'm guessing the money from 10 years ago went to North America, and also went to the security you mentioned. So are there specific plans for the renewal?
Yeah, so over the last several years, the levy funding has really supported more the critical operations for the zoo. As I mentioned, animal care, veterinary care, our food budget's $2.2 million and growing. You can imagine with two new elephants on the ground. Yeah, we imagine that the levy funds will continue to support the daily operation of the zoo, caring for the animals, our facilities team, our trades team, making sure that we can continue to maintain that nearly 100-year-old institution. And so, so in the future, we'll go out and do fundraising, private philanthropy to really move our capital projects forward and really use the levy funding to support the operation of the zoo.
I mean, I've been around long enough. You were not here for this, but a long time ago, there was a levy where they wanted to build a second zoo downtown and they wanted to build a hotel. So nothing like that for this project.
No, nothing downtown. We've contemplated a hotel on our property, and that's something that we're still looking at. We actually did a feasibility study last year to determine whether or not it would be successful, and all indications are that it would. So that's certainly something that could happen in the future. It's much different. Yeah, I've read and learned about that situation back in 2015, and that was a tough one.
Now, is there any talk of taxes for Delaware County? Because right now we're talking about Franklin County.
Yeah, and I think that's a discussion certainly that will I think it's important to talk to our Delaware County commissioners, talk to our stakeholders in Delaware County. Is this something that they would be interested in? You know, Franklin County residents, as you indicate, pay that levy, and then in return, they get discounted admission to the zoo, discounted membership pricing. So we'd certainly be open to that.
Now, this will be the first time the zoo is asking voters for money since the zoo faced its $2.3 million theft scandal, which happened back in 2021. The previous CEO, Tom Stauff, and four other zoo administrators have been sentenced, and some of them are serving prison time. You were brought in as CEO after the scandal happened, but what would you say to Franklin County voters who may not be inclined to give the zoo more levy money after the scandal?
Yeah, so I think that's a good question, and I would say that we are a fundamentally different institution today than we were 5 years ago. And a couple of months ago, we held a joint press conference with the state auditor, Keith Faber, and it was a chance for us to just remind again everyone in the community all the changes that we've incorporated into our operating systems and our financial system since this fraud was discovered. So as bad as that was to go through, if you look at just about every key performance indicator, we're performing at a higher level now. We're a stronger institution. We're a better governed institution. We have much better financial controls, stronger policies. Our board members and senior staff have gone through additional training, actually working with the Attorney General Charitable University Program, where you can actually learn more about how not-for-profits are governed, sort of best practices. So, so many things have changed and improved since that happened. And I think, and we've even seen this in some of the polling data that we've done, there's an extraordinarily high level of awareness about what happened at the zoo. You can imagine. I mean, everyone has a lot of pride in the Columbus Zoo. But I think folks, and based on the polling data, folks are pleased with the direction we're going. Our attributes, our favorability is right up there with the best not-for-profit institutions and cultural organizations in the city. And I think folks can separate the behavior of four people versus the remaining team and now with new leadership, you know, what's transpired since then. So I tell folks it really is a new day at the Columbus Zoo, and again, as painful as this was to go through, we are by any measure a stronger institution today than we were 5 years ago.
Was there any talk of delaying the levy renewal because you were worried about voter reaction? Maybe people were not going to be inclined to vote for this?
No, there was never any thought of delay. In fact, even after I accepted the position here, and so I joined 2021, I was really curious about the impact of our our brand and our community. So we actually did some polling in the spring of 2022. So this was literally a year after the news broke. I was amazed even at that point how strong and positive the feelings for the zoo were at that time. So again, literally 1 year after it happened. And so that gave me confidence again that, you know, folks that live in this region, they're they're smart. They understand. They understand there can be grift at the top, but you can still have a fundamentally sound organization, and it just needed new leadership. So, no, there was never really a talk of delaying.
Okay. And you're just hopeful that this is not going to impact your levy campaign. You're just going to keep talking about the positives of the zoo and not worry about those four individuals.
No, I'm certainly not going to worry about the four individuals. Again, I think it's important for us to continue to remind the community about the changes that have happened at the zoo, and there's been so many. But ultimately, you know, we've got such a positive future and an exciting outlook, and I think folks are seeing on the ground the improvements that we're doing at the zoo. You mentioned some of the new features that came online this year. I mean, we've invested almost $60 million in capital over the last 2 years in new habitats for animals and new features for our guests. And I think folks are seeing a better maintained zoo with more programming. We've got the Asian Lantern Festival coming up, so new events. It really is just a new day, and I think that's a message that we're going to continue to share with our community.
Scandal aside, are you worried that people are property taxed out and they might just vote no because they don't want any more property taxes? Because it seems like everyone's talking about property taxes right now being so high.
It certainly is. And we absolutely understand that. But I think, again, folks will support institutions that they're proud of, where they feel there's value. And I think we've been able to demonstrate that year in and year out over the last 3 or 4 years. And so, yeah, ultimately, it's going to be a decision that the voters have to make. But I feel confident at this point that we're doing the right thing. And at the end of the day, folks in Franklin County want a great zoo, and we're going to continue to provide them with a great zoo.
Now, a bulk of the zoo is in Delaware County, and it's very convenient for a lot of Delaware County residents to drive to the zoo. So, again, I'll ask you one more time. Are you going to ask for property taxes from Delaware County anytime in the future?
Yeah, I think those are conversations that we want to have with the commissioners, with the stakeholders in Delaware County, and just see if there's an appetite for that.
And coming up, Tom Schmidt is staying with us, president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and the Wilds, and we're going to talk about how they keep zoo animals cool in these hot summer months. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. As summer has been heating up, some of the animals at the zoo are feeling the effects. But the zoo has come up with some clever ways to keep animals cool, from ice blocks to frozen watermelons to extra shade. Still with us is Tom Schmid, the president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and the Wilds. Thanks again for being here, Tom.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me.
So how has the zoo been handling the heat? I mean, you know, it's hot every July, but this July feels particularly sweltering. How are the animals doing?
Yeah, they're doing well. It's always something that we are very focused on. I mean, we get focused when the weather gets really cold in the winter. We have storms in the spring or the fall. So the parameter, the habitat that these animals are in, it's vitally important that we maintain great conditions for the animals. And so we'll do different things. Many of the animals have opportunities to go into their dens. And for example, our red pandas, native to Asia, colder temperatures, they actually have air conditioned areas where they can reside during the day if they want to. You know, making sure that the animals have misters and water features. You mentioned frozen treats are always really, really popular. We know the animals sometimes aren't going to be quite as active during the summertime, so we always try to prepare our guests for that. But yeah, the curators and our keepers are really creative in terms of making sure that that the animals are well taken care for and don't overheat. So that's a it's a pretty remarkable process. A lot of thought and effort goes into that.
It has to be a delicate balance because people come to the zoo and they want to see the animals. But if it's really hot, you got to feel bad for the polar bears and the Arctic foxes.
Well, and again, that's part of the education that we have to do with our guests. So the polar bears, they can dive into their 60-degree water and cool off. They enjoy that. Explaining that the animals might not be as active as they would on a typical day. So sometimes folks will like to come to the zoo when we first open in the morning. Animals tend to be maybe a little bit more active at that point. But again, you walk through the aquarium or our reptile house or, you know, the underwater viewing for river otters. There's lots of spaces where, regardless of how hot it is, these animals are going to be really active. So still plenty of things to see and do.
Now, visitors who want to cool down can also visit Zumbezi Bay because you happen to have a water park. So we call you the president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and the Wilds, but you also are in charge of a water park.
We do, and the water park is really a remarkable feature for us. It's one of the largest water parks in Ohio and one of the top 10 water parks in the country. But the most unique part about it is that the profits from the water park actually support the Columbus Zoo and the Wilds and our wildlife conservation work, our education programming. And so we like to say it's a water park with a cause, with a water park with a purpose. And then this year we just previewed Conservation Tower with a couple of new rides that have never been done before any other water park in the country. I've actually had a chance to ride down two of them. They are a lot of fun. And so we're really excited. The summer, Zumbezi Bay is actually having a great summer. They're performing probably better in terms of year-over-year attendance than the zoo or the golf course or the Wilds at this point. And as you can imagine, hot weather is good for Zumbezi Bay attendance. So a great program, a great attraction, and something folks can feel good about just attending that, knowing that they're helping save animals from extinction.
Is it just called Conservation Tower, or I haven't been there? Does it have something on it to teach you something?
It does. So the idea was, so we've got three different rides: Muscle Mayhem, the Hive, which is reminiscent of a beehive, which talks about some of the pollinator habitats we have at the front of the zoo. The Muscle Mayhem specifically focused on our freshwater mussel program in Captina Falls, another area that we do conservation work in, and so. We started actually last year with some new interpretation at Zumbezi Bay to share with the guests there about the mission of the zoo and how some of the revenue from Zumbezi Bay actually supports the zoo. So we started that program about a year ago, and this really is sort of the next iteration of tying in the conservation work that's done in the Wilds and the zoo with the fun experiences that families are having at Zumbezi Bay.
We talked about Hellbenders earlier. Are any of the rides at Zumbezi Bay called the Hellbender?
No, that's actually a great idea. We need to think about that. Yeah. We have the new campground at the Wilds.
That sounds like a great water park ride name.
Absolutely, and that reminds me of the new campground we have at the Wilds named after the Hellbender. So the Hellbender RV campground at the Wilds, that just opened this summer, and we really pay tribute to that remarkable amphibian in that program there.
So tell me more about the Wilds. So it's... roughly, is it like an hour and a half, a little less than an hour and a half from Columbus, right?
Yep.
And so for anyone who has never been there, it's a separate fee. If you're a zoo member, you can be a Wilds member, you can add that on. But it's a separate park, it's a safari park. Tell me what's new at the Wilds.
Yeah, so the Wilds is a remarkable area. We have nearly 10,000 acres of habitat that's been restored to just a remarkable landscape. Large herds of mammals, some that are actually extinct in the wilds, like scimitar horned oryx. And so it's a chance for folks to have a safari experience unlike really any other in the country. And for new this year, there's so much to see and do at the Wilds. Mm-hmm. We have the safari tour, zip lining, fishing, horseback riding, hiking. You really need to spend about a day and a half or 2 days to do everything. And so we have lodging opportunities. We have yurts that we've developed out there. We've got different cabins. We've got the Straker Lodge. but the campground now, so folks can bring in their RV, spend the night or two at the Hellbender campground, and then enjoy everything that the Wilds has to offer. So that just came online a couple of months ago, and we're already booked up for most of the weekends. We also have primitive camping sites out there as well, and there's a mountain bike trail adjacent to the campground. So just so much to do out there.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about what's new at the Columbus Zoo with Tom Schmid, president and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and the Wilds. So how is the Wilds funded? Can it fund itself based off of tickets, or is it also using the levy we talked about and operations at the zoo and Zubizi Bay? Is it all one big pot?
No, we keep our funding pretty specific to each institution, so the Wilds doesn't receive any of the levy funding from Franklin County. That just goes toward the zoo. And the Wilds, I give a lot of credit to our team there. They're very entrepreneurial. So that is a separate 501c3, not-for-profit institution. And they are able to largely develop a break-even budget. So the revenue they generate from the lodging and the tours and some of the operations out there largely pays for the operating expenses. The zoo will typically come in and help support. So we take care of some of their corporate functions. So the finance, HR, things like that are overseen by the zoo and our zoo team. And then we also work closely with the team there to fundraise for capital projects. And so it's I really think about the zoo, the Wilds, as an extension of the Columbus Zoo. It's really our sort of on-site wildlife conservation center, a center for restoration ecology and caring for assurance populations and really doing some pretty remarkable conservation work that benefits the entire zoological community in addition to these species in the wild. So, but yeah, overall it does pretty well.
Bouncing back to the zoo proper here in Central Ohio, I wanted to ask you about North America Trek again, because we started the show by talking about how the $40 million project and the area just opened and it's brand new. And then I come to learn there's a part two.
There is. So that's such a large area. And so when we first started the design work for North America Trek, we actually broke it up into four or five phases because it was such a large project. As we started moving forward with the design process, we know we really wanted to get a lot of it done first, so we decided to combine several of those phases and do about 60% in phase one, which is what has just opened now. So the remaining areas that we want to work on include habitats for our moose, for our wolverines, for our mountain lions, our caribou or our reindeer. And so those are areas we're actually starting the conceptual design work for renovating or really reimagining those habitats this summer going into this fall. Hopefully break ground sometime toward the end of 2026 and then have that second phase completed by 2028.
Okay, so if you're walking through North America and you're heading toward the polar bears in the back, right, which is the long walk, the moose are right there before the train tracks.
Exactly.
So that area still looks the same at this point.
But, yeah, okay. And so we've got a lot of exciting ideas to really reimagine what those habitats are going to look like. And again, that'll be open before we know it.
Okay. And what's the timetable on that? I'm sorry.
So we're hoping to open that in
2028. Yeah. Okay. Well, closer to us than 2028, what events are going on for the rest of the summer and into the fall for the zoo?
Yeah. So we've got a lot happening. As I mentioned, our Lantern Festival, we'll kick that off at the end of this month, and that'll run through the beginning of October, and then that rolls right into Boo at the Zoo. We've also got some other fun events. We just had Run Wild, so that was our second annual run through the zoo. Over 1,800 people came out on Sunday to do that race.
And like a 5K?
5K race, okay. Yep. In about 2 weeks, we'll have our Jack Hanna Legacy Golf Tournament. So we're bringing that back. That used to be a golf tournament that we did prior to COVID, and now we're bringing that back. So we're excited about that. And then, of course, we've got Franklin County Community Days coming up in August. So that's a chance. So even though folks from Franklin County get a discount to come to the zoo or buy a membership, we actually have a special discount that day where admission for any Franklin County resident is half price. We also bring a lot of community partners that we work with and a lot of great programming that day. So that's coming up on August 17th and 18th. And yeah, so before we know it, it's going to be the fall, and then we'll start getting ready for wildlife. So a busy season coming up for us.
Always busy at the zoo. And then I mentioned before, you know, you run the Columbus Zoo, you run the wilds, you happen to have a water park, but you also have a golf course. You're a busy guy.
And the golf course is a great operation as well. And really, it's interesting. We've talked a little bit about the challenging weather, some of the rain in the spring. The golf course is doing great. We have a very fanatical base of golfers that come out to Safari Golf, and they'll come out if it's 40 degrees or if it's drizzling. And so we're actually on track and slightly ahead of budget for the golf course this year. So just a lot of kudos to our staff that work really hard. It's an Audubon certified golf course, so only one of about maybe 2 or 3% in the country gets that certification in terms of how we manage the turf and provide wildlife habitats out there. So again, very much aligned with our mission.
We only have about a minute left, but I did want to say that the polar bears have always been my favorite at the zoo, but more recently, your sea lion exhibit is amazing. I love it. That was one of the first things that probably opened right around when you were starting, right?
It did. It actually opened in 2020, so it didn't quite get the fanfare that North America attracted. But I've been to a lot of zoos, a lot of aquariums, marine parks all over the country, all over the world. It's one of the best sea lion and seal habitats of any facility in the country. And it's so close to the entrance, so it's always something easy to see. And if it's the hottest day, that water is still nice and cool for the animals, so those animals are always active. It's a pretty remarkable habitat.
Well, Tom Schmid, I want to thank you so much for joining us for the hour today. Tom Schmid, President and CEO of the Columbus Zoo and the Wilds. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.